And hello, everyone. It's time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger. It is Wednesday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. As we read the Messenger together, I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Glad to have you listening, as always, of course. Kind of a cloudy, dreary day here in Fort Dodge, but we're just a little more patient, then we'll have some sunshine by the end of the week. In the meantime, let's go ahead and take a look at today's Messenger. Expanding STEM education, kits bring fun learning home with Dodger Academy students. That's the title of the first article. Dodger Academy students will have the opportunity to learn about healthy eating habits in outer space over their spring break this week, with thanks to a community partnership with Iowa State University Extension and Outreach of Webster County. They partner with us in the past where they'd come in and do STEM activities with the kids, but because of COVID, we can't have volunteers in the building, said Aaron Brookshire, director of the Dodger Academy program. Dodger Academy is an after-school program for Fort Dodge Community School District's students in kindergarten through fifth grade. It is held at Butler Elementary School each day. So with students being on spring break this week, Webster County Extension and Outreach assembled dozens of science, technology, education, and math kits, or STEM, for the students to take home and have a fun learning. The Berenstain Bears book about junk food and other resources for students to decide if a food is a healthy choice and how often they should eat it. The kit includes instructions on how to create a healthy snack and a game families can play to make sure they are using the energy the healthy food gives them. For making the snack, the kit includes a flexible cutting board, a plastic knife for the youngsters to learn how to safely chop vegetables and fruits with the help of an adult. For the older children in grades 3 through 5, the kit is astronaut lander. During injuries, he retired from professional football a year later and went on to receive a Master of Science degree in Materials Sciences Engineering from the University of Virginia. He was selected by NASA to be an astronaut in 1998. The STEM kit also includes materials for students to create their own moon lander. It's something educational that will kind of keep the students' wheels turning and thinking about different stuff, and it's a great way for families to get involved with what their kids are doing here, Brookshire said. Brookshire said the Dodger Academy program is always welcoming new community partnerships and donors to help bring new learning opportunities to its students. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, looking next at our article entitled Supervisors Decline to End County Mask Mandate. A resolution that would have ended Webster County's mask mandate on March 31st died on the table at Tuesday's Board of Supervisors meeting. The resolution sourced from a Webster County Board of Health recommendation made on March 4th was motioned by Supervisor Keith Dinklaw, but failed to receive a second from Supervisors Nikki Conrad or Bob Thode. Supervisor Nick Carlson, who has previously supported the mandate, was absent. After the meeting adjourned, off-the-record discussions made it clear that supervisors were in disagreement on what the Board of Health actually recommended at its March 4th meeting. Supervisor Mark Campbell, who is on the Board of Health, thought that the Board of Health voted to let the regulation expire at the end of the month. Supervisors and the Board of Health first implemented the protocol in December amid an unprecedented wave in COVID-19 cases following a similar mandate from the City of Fort Dodge. The city's mandate expired earlier this year. County Auditor Doreen Pliner, who wrote the supervisor's resolution, said it was sourced from language sent by the Board of Health that read, Campbell amended his initial motion to extend Board of Health Regulation 2020-01 through March 31st. Campbell said that motion was a compromise between the other Board of Health members to end it at the end of the month. In a February meeting, the board voted to recommend the option to suspend the regulation on March 15th. Conrad had the understanding that the recommendation from the March 4th meeting was similar, allowing the board to revisit the issue on possibly lifting the mandate on March 31st. Thode said he wanted to review the minutes from that meeting before voting on the matter. I'm hearing two things. I want to make sure I'm okay on that before I say yes, he said. I'll go with the recommendations. I want to make sure everybody's on the same page. Echoing recommendations from the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and epidemiologists, Conrad said that lifting the mask mandate too early would be detrimental to public health, prompting a resurgence of COVID-19 infections, while arguing that dwindling positivity and infection rates over the last 2 months proved the mandate worked. With the county mask regulation still in place, she was the only supervisor in attendance wearing a mask Tuesday, two layers, in fact, per new CDC guidelines. As the adjourned meeting's conversation devolved, Dinklaw and Campbell both said that many in the county were tired of wearing a mask. I'm the only one wearing a mask. That is irresponsible leadership, she said. And people are going around saying, don't worry, we're going to lift that. You don't have to do it. It's not enforceable. We never did have a mandate, Dinklaw replied. We're talking about people's lives, Keith, Conrad said. No end date has been placed on the mandate yet. The mandate will be added to the next meeting's agenda to be discussed again. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, The Hunt is On, is the title of our next article. Downtown Fort Dodge businesses are inviting members of the community to spend some time in the downtown area this spring, hunting Easter eggs. From Saturday through April 3rd, several downtown businesses will hide colorful Easter eggs in their storefront windows for passersby to find. I was trying to think of ways to get people back to walking downtown, shopping, and just a fun activity that anyone can do, said Mary Kay Daniel, owner of Mary Kay's Gifts and Home Decor. So we came up with this Easter egg hunt. There aren't any prizes or contests with the hunt, Daniel said. It's just a fun way to get people downtown. Everyone's been stir crazy being inside for so long, she said. The weather is getting nice. Why not walk downtown? Any downtown business can participate. The Easter egg hunt is not limited to just retailers and restaurants, Daniel said. You just need some crayons and markers and a picture of an egg and had just posted in your window, she said. Daniel said that she hopes once more businesses learn that anyone can participate with the Easter egg hunt, that more will choose to do so and put up their colorful eggs. Individuals and families are encouraged to post a picture of their hunt on social media using the tags hashtag Main Street Fort Dodge and hashtag Shop Local Shop Central. We're ready to get people back downtown, Daniel said. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, supervisors receive bids on culverts. That'll be the title of the next article we read. Webster County supervisors unsealed three competing construction bids Tuesday for a package of five culvert installments. Those supervisors select Peterson Contractors Incorporated of Rhinebeck. County engineer Jamie Joel said after the meeting that two sealed bids were mistakenly left out. The special supervisors meeting will be scheduled for next Tuesday to unseal the remaining two bids and make a final selection. Of the three bids, Peterson undercut its next highest bidder or competitor by more than $100,000, coming in with the lowest bid of $708,752. Midwest Contracting of DeWitt came in second at $817,140. Weideman Incorporated of Dallas came in with the highest bid so far at $960,825. The project will encompass reinforced concrete box culvert installments at the following bridge locations, which are currently single-span bridges. 330th Street east of Carter Avenue, Quail Avenue north of 150th Street, 290th Street east of Carter Avenue, 340th Street east of Easter Avenue, 295th Street east of Easter Avenue. Supervisors also set a public hearing for the Secondary Roads Department's budget for fiscal year 2022 and its five-year construction program at its regular meeting on April 13th. At 10 a.m. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, we'll find out what our next article is. And people are seeking some ideas from the public. Lincoln Neighborhood Survey Begins is the title of the article. Fort Dodge residents now have the chance to share their ideas for the future of one of the city's older neighborhoods. An online survey that opens today invites people to offer their thoughts on the Lincoln neighborhood, located just north of downtown. Input received through the survey will be used to create a plan for the area. The survey focuses on an area bordered by North 7th Street, Dakota Street, North 9th Street, and 1st Avenue North. People do not need to be a resident of the neighborhood to participate. We are looking for input from the entire community, said Carissa Harvey, the city's strategic planner. To complete the survey, go to the city's Facebook page and follow the link. The survey should take about 5 minutes to complete. It is open beginning March 17th through March 24th. The city government targeted the Lincoln neighborhood for improvements beginning in about 2006. Since then, several houses have been torn down, others have been rehabilitated, and a couple of new ones have been built. Harvey said the new plan for the neighborhood should be done this summer. Again, to participate in the Lincoln Neighborhood Survey, go to the Fort Dodge City Government's Facebook page. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, and I'll click on where it says More Local News, and we'll see if anything awaits us there. Webster County Leadership Development Program is being planned. Registrations are currently being accepted for Webster County Leadership 2021, a program designed to maximize the strengths and skills of current and future community leaders. Webster County Leadership 2021 will include 3 training sessions focusing on topics that include understanding ourselves and others, communication and listening, and leading effective meetings. The sessions will be held from noon to 4 on 3 Thursdays, April 8th, 15th, and the 22nd, with April 29th reserved as a makeup date in case an earlier session has to be canceled. Sessions will be taught by Iowa State University Extension and Outreach Community and Economic Development Program Specialists. The program will be presented at Dayton Community Center in Dayton. Webster County Leadership 2021 is sponsored by Webster County Extension and is looking for sponsors to provide meals and snacks. Registration is $45, and the registration deadline is March 25th. Lunch is included in the program. Enrollment is limited to the first 30 participants, so sign up early to reserve your spot in the class. Newly elected and appointed officials are encouraged to register for the program, as well as longtime leaders interested in polishing their skills and individuals interested in getting more involved in their community. Registration forms can be found on the Webster County Extension website, and that is extensioniastate.edu/Webster, or contact the Webster County Extension Program Coordinator, Linda Klein, at 576-2119. Webster County Leadership 2021 Planning Committee members are Sarah Piper, Jim Sukin, Berna Tucker, Kendra Breitsprecher, and Linda Klein. We'll head back to the main page of the Messenger. It looks like I've caught all the main articles that are in the paper, so let's take a quick look at from our files. This will go back to March 2006, and there was a picture in the paper, the Gale fish tank, as they don their favorite eyewear as they cheer on the boys at the state basketball tournament in Des Moines. Maybe their fashion statement support helped as the Gales drilled Goose Lake Northeast in 2A action and were set to play in the championship game. And that goes back to, again, March 2006, or 15 years ago. News of record is what we'll look at next. The news of record for March 17th begins with the Fort Dodge police logs from Monday. Fort Dodge police reported 3 domestic calls, a noise disturbance in the 100 block of North 10th Street, suspicious vehicle, 2900 block of 19th Avenue North, criminal mischief, 1300 block 2nd Avenue North, burglary, 2400 block 5th Avenue South, hit and run, North 29th Street and Dodger Drive, suspicious vehicle, 300 blocks of 13th Street Northwest, suspicious person, 1st Avenue South and South 10th Street, criminal mischief, near 5th Avenue North and North 15th Street, Hit and Run, First Avenue South and South 25th Street, Criminal Mischief in the 2000 block of 3rd Avenue North. An unsupervised child was reported near 3rd Avenue North and North 16th Street. Car accident at 1st Avenue South and South 3rd Street. Suspicious vehicle in the 1300 block of 3rd Avenue Northwest. That is the Fort Dodge Police Log for Monday. On Tuesday, Webster County Magistrate Court, violation or probation, Alicia Hellman, 30, Webster City, transferred to Board of Parole. Driving while barred, Jameson Warwick, 24, preliminary hearing waived. Driving under revocation, no insurance, speeding, driving under suspension. Charges all filed against Freddie David, 28, of Newell. Preliminary hearing waived on the revocation charge. Continued 180 days on the no insurance and speeding charge. And also continued 180 days for driving under suspension. Unlawful passing of school bus, Chase Monahan of Fort Dodge, fined $456.75. And that is the extent of magistrate court from Tuesday. We will head over next to the Messenger editorial page. The editorial for today is low state unemployment rate is positive sign. And this looks like this is the Messenger editorial for today. Iowa continues to lag behind the rest of the nation in one economic category, but in this case, that is a good thing. Iowa's unemployment rate for January, the most recent month for which statistics are available, was 3.5%. The national unemployment rate for January was 6.3%. According to Iowa Workforce Development, state unemployment's rate inched down slightly from the revised December figure of 3.7%. The state agency reported that about 3,000 non-farm jobs were added between December and January. The construction industry led the way, adding about 1,000 of those jobs. The manufacturing sector was next, adding about 700 jobs. Other increases were in education and health services, 700 jobs, leisure and hospitality business, 400 jobs, and financial activities, or 300 jobs. Iowa Workforce Development estimated that there are 57,400 unemployed people in the state. While there are still too many Iowans who want a job that are still looking for one, the latest unemployment figures are good news. The fact that the unemployment rate dropped just a little bit is also good news. It is a development that should set the state up for growth throughout the rest of the year. This good news probably cannot be attributed to one decision or development. A lot of things had to be done by both government and business leaders to create this result. We hope government and business leaders keep working together to get our economy into a growth pattern that will benefit everyone. And that is today's Messenger editorial. There's a Thanks the Messenger letter to the editor today, and this is submitted by Carol Seaman of Fort Dodge. To the editor, thank you to those responsible for producing the Messenger. We are fortunate to have this newspaper 6 days a week, although I did enjoy having that seventh day. The number of newspapers in the United States that are able to survive has decreased significantly in the past few years. I am thankful that the careful financial planning of the Messenger has allowed it to stay in production. At a time when media coverage has become very slanted, I appreciate that the Messenger makes an effort to report an accurate version of what is occurring in our community and country. I also appreciate that we receive positive news that occurs in our community and the surrounding areas, and not only the ever-present negative activities. Thank you to all the employees and the owners of the Messenger. And that is provided by, or submitted rather, by Carol Seaman of Fort Dodge. Heading back to the Messenger editorial page, Feeling Lucky is a local column that appears in today's Messenger about St. Patrick's Day. This is submitted by Julie Thorson, who is the president and CEO of Friendship Haven. This St. Patrick's Day certainly feels better than last year's. Celebrating the luck of the Irish was the furthest thing from my mind in 2020. In fact, for those in the field of aging services, luck took on an entirely different meaning. Our guidance or our curse was, it's not if COVID-19 will hit, but it's when. That was the way we operated for 4 months until the actual first case landed on our campus. During the months of waiting and preparing and steadying ourselves for what might happen, we learned a lot about ourselves. We learned we can adapt and change in a moment's notice. Our culture is what sustains us, and our team kept coming back in spite of the unknown. We watched as long-term care communities across the country were blamed and persecuted for not only letting COVID-19 in, but for spreading it as well. We were even known by some as super spreaders because of the communal setting in which we serve seniors. At the time, I paused and thought of this Irish saying. I complained I had no shoes until I met a man with no feet. In other words, perspective and a steady voice were incredibly important, not to introduce fear, but to stay positive. To this day, I still keep this in mind, not in a sense that things could also get worse, but rather appreciate where you are. For weeks, we would say we got lucky again until that saying meant nothing. We all learned and realized COVID-19 was going to force us in its way in. Despite our best efforts, luck had nothing to do with it. Following the first case this summer, we quickly found ourselves wondering if luck would ever be on our side again. In early August, we found ourselves in shock as the derecho ravaged parts of Iowa. For some of our colleagues, this meant not only did they have to evacuate their damaged communities, but they had to do so while some of their residents had tested positive for COVID. Double whammy. I had several calls with colleagues, and the why me mentality was there, but it was never spoken. It was understood. I again was reminded to be thankful. In the middle of the night, in August 2020, Friendship Haven had its own disaster, albeit not a natural one, but one that certainly created an emergency. The sprinkler system malfunctioned, basically caused our beautiful Kenyon place to flood, requiring us to evacuate 52 people. Our resilient Kenyon Place residents were forced out of bed in their PJs and told they could not return to their homes. We felt like, what's next? We felt like what's next for several months as COVID also made its unwelcome home here for a few weeks. All the while, our team came back every day and our residents kept smiling in spite of living through a disaster during a pandemic. We were not alone. Many people living and working during the national emergency found themselves dealing with life's emergencies as the pandemic raged on. This week, we welcome our first Kenyon Place residents back home. The move-ins will take several weeks. Residents of Kenyon Place, our independent apartments, have been very patient and understanding, and when we fully reopen, they look forward to welcoming more neighbors to their building. They will be sporting I Survived the Flood of 2020 masks, a friendly reminder that even during times of crisis, humor, a positive attitude and resiliency can make all the difference in the world. The silver lining in all this should teach us to appreciate each day. As for this thankful Norwegian during the St. Patrick's week, I continue to try and keep things in perspective and offer a smile. After all, my most cherished Irish proverb isn't about luck. It remains, quote, do not resent growing old. Many are denied the privilege. And again, this is a column that was submitted by Julie Thorson, and she is the president and CEO of Friendship Haven. We'll take a look next at the Webster City Freeman Journal, the Daily Freeman Journal. The hunt is on as LLBRV invites community to find the clay houses. There's a picture of a clay house that's been built that's a beautiful little addition to anyone's home. Eagle-eyed area residents should be on the lookout for a couple of small but colorful additions to the landscape around Webster City. Today, Legacy Learning Boone River Valley is hiding two small clay fairy houses around the community. The lucky person who finds one of the houses will receive a free scholarship to participate in the Clay Fairy House workshop on Monday, March 22nd at the Produce Station Pottery Studio from 6 to 8 p.m. Madeline Loring, a Webster City High School art teacher and a ceramic artist, will teach the workshop. To find some clues, you may visit the LLBRV Facebook page. The people locating the fairy houses are asked to take them to the Purdue's Pottery Station, 723 Seneca Street, to claim their free scholarship for the upcoming Clay Fairy House Workshop. Heading back to the main page of the Freeman Journal, just taking a quick look at the lifestyle section to see if they have anything for us to read. Yesterday, while Hunter and Friends Forever staff member Shannon were on a walk, enjoying the beautiful weather, they noticed a lot of trash that littered the trail. So they grabbed a sack and gloves and decided to do something about it. By the time they got to their turnaround point, they found themselves with a plastic bag full of debris and wishing they had brought more to fill up. Hunter and Shannon will be doing this as often as they can. And that is from a picture in the Webster City Freeman Journal, and it shows this young man walking along the Graceland Cemetery there in Webster City. We'll take a look next at some articles in the Marshalltown Times-Republican. The city rededicates the Veterans Memorial Coliseum in Marshalltown. The Veterans Memorial Coliseum has two reasons to cherish March 15th. Not only was that day, Monday, used as the day of the grand reopening and rededication, but 90 years ago, residents of Marshalltown gathered to do the same thing on March 15th. Roughly 60 city officials and people active in the reopening watched the rededication ceremony and listened to a variety of people speak about their memory of the Coliseum. Marshalltown Parks and Rec Director Jeff Hubbard welcomed the socially distanced crowd in his spacious gymnasium before the color guard presented the American and Iowa flags with the Pledge of Allegiance. Fundraising committee co-chairs Vic Helberg and Steve Storjahan regaled the small crowd with memories and spoke about the $1.3 million fundraising effort. Seeing this community come together to support us after being knocked down hard 2 years ago in a row is just amazing, Storjahan said. We had donations coming in from all over the country. They all had ties in some way to Marshalltown. He said he carries many fond memories of the Coliseum, and now is the time for people to make new ones. Karen Gregor, the executive director of the Martha Ellen Tye Foundation, said the foundation embraced the opportunity to help fix the tornado-destroyed town. She challenged residents to use the Coliseum as a benchmark for which standards can be set amidst the continuing tornado and derecho recovery. Fundraising committee members Deb Metlin and Kelly Thurston said everyone who donated to restore the Coliseum deserved a round of applause. Thurston told everyone the highest honor the committee could give to a donor was the Medal of Honor, which was awarded with a gift of $10,000 or more. More than 20 Medal of Honor recipients were invited to the rededication ceremony. Jennifer Hart, the recreation supervisor for the Marshalltown Parks and Rec Department, presented an award to Jason Brown for all of the help he gave Marshalltown. Brown hosted a 2019 benefit concert to raise funds for the Coliseum. Mayor Joel Greer said one of his favorite fundraising memories was learning about the class of 1964 from Marshalltown, which raised more than $10,000 for the effort. That's the kind of thing that happens around here. Greer officially declared March 15th as the rededication of the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. Hubbard and City Administrator Jessica Kinzer said the city had actually started working on renovating the Coliseum in 2017, and then the tornado hit, which was kind of fortunate as it opened up the usage of insurance money. The ceremony ended with the return of the color by the color guard. You are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. And now we will take a look at today's Messenger's obituary page. Leonard W. Deal. Leonard W. Deal, Jr., 73, of Fort Dodge, died Tuesday, March 16th at his home. Celebration of life will be at 6 o'clock Thursday, March 18th at Gunderson Funeral Home. In cremation services, visitation is 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday at Gunderson's. Interment will take place at North Lawn Cemetery Friday morning. Leonard Lenny W. Deal, Jr. was born October 26, 1947, to Leonard W. Sr. and Donna May Breeden, DL in Fort Dodge. Lenny attended Fort Dodge Senior High School. He worked for many years for Gold Bond National Gypsum. Leonard W. Deal was united in marriage to Nancy L. Anderson on May 29, 1969 in Fort Dodge. They were happily married for 42 years until Nancy's passing in 2011. Lenny later married Deborah Tagg on January 11, 2013 in Fort Dodge. Lenny enjoyed hunting, fishing, gardening, walking, visits to casinos, and antiquing, but he most enjoyed spending time with his family. Lenny is survived by his wife, Deborah, two daughters, Kimberly K. Julius and Lisa Marie Kale Parsons, four grandchildren, Alexis, Kaylin, Tate, and Evan, and many step-grandchildren, nieces, and nephews. He was preceded in death by his first wife, Nancy, his parents, Leonard and Donna, and his sister, Dixie. Memorials may be left to the discretion of the family. Alice Joanne Wyckoff. From Alona, memorial services for Alice Joanne Wyckoff will be 10:30 Thursday at the First United Methodist Church in Algona. Visitation is 5 to 7, and that was being held on Wednesday. Masks are required. Lent's Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Also from Algona, John Hood. Mass of the Christian Burial for John Hood will be 11 o'clock Saturday at St. Cecilia Catholic Church in Algona. Visitation is 4 to 7 Friday at Lent's Funeral Home in Algona. Face masks are required. Lent's Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. And that completes the obituary page for today. We'll head over next to the sports section. If I click the right place on my handy-dandy computer, Drew Bennett has announced that he is leaving Northern Iowa. The closer Drew Bennett gets to the real world, the more he realizes the importance of planning for a life after wrestling. The former Fort Dodge State Champion officially entered the NCAA transfer portal on Tuesday and will be leaving the University of Northern Iowa after nearly 3 years at the school. Bennett doesn't have a definitive timetable for his next decision, but stressed academics will be a top priority during the recruiting process. The 2018 Fort Dodge Senior High graduate remains as committed as ever to his career on the mat. His future in business will also be a sticking point moving forward, though. My main focus the rest of the way is to get the most out of both my wrestling and educational experiences, said Bennett, who carries a cumulative 3.25 collegiate grade point average. I really want to be a sports agent someday. When I look into the specifics of what I needed to make that happen here, I started to see that maybe you and I wasn't going to be the best fit for me. I'm not going to say this is an easy decision. It's not. I love a lot about you and I, and it's going to be incredibly difficult to leave my friends and family. But this is an important time for me to be, quote, selfish, so to speak, not in a bad way, but college is such a short period of time, and you have to make the most of it. Once you start to picture your future, you have to prioritize what it's going to take to get there. Bennett spent most of the 2021 season as the Panthers' starting 141-pounder. He teamed with fellow former Dodgers Brody Teske, Tristan Lara, and Cade Lara to become the first quartet from the same Iowa high school in over 70 years to compete in the same Division I wrestling lineup. Bennett's collegiate career record, including his redshirt season and unattached matches, stands at 25-14 overall, between 133 and 141 pounds. He was 2-6 this year with 3 losses to top 15 opponents. I'm going to talk to coaches and look at schools while evaluating not just the program itself, but the business school, internship programs, and everything else, Bennett said. It was 153-8 as a Dodger and a key piece to their 2018 championship squad. I really appreciate the support, as always, from family and friends who have been with me from day one. They're going to be by your side and love you no matter what. I talked to Brody, Tristan, and Cade ahead of time about it. It's tough. They'll always be my brothers no matter what. The same goes for some of my other Panther teammates and friends who aren't directly a part of the UNI wrestling community. Some tears were shed. Ultimately, though, this is what I need and what's best for me. Bennett believes the highs and lows he's expected on the mat, as he's experienced on the mat, as well as dealing with a handful of serious injuries along the way, will only make him stronger. I've learned so much about how to deal with adversity when things aren't going my way, or I've got a long road ahead, and this is the stuff that I'll be able to lean on to give me an edge, Bennett said. And not just for the rest of my collegiate wrestling career. Someday when I'm one of 150 people interviewing for a position, it will help separate me from the pack. I've dealt with a lot. I've gone through a lot. I've been forced into patience and had to find a perspective. You have this vision of how things will go when you get to college. Well, reality rarely lives up to that. You find out a lot about who you are and what you want and what you don't. Bennett also added, it's a little scary to think about starting over somewhere, not really knowing anyone, but he's also embracing the challenge of branching off and blazing his own path. I talked to Brody about a lot of this, given he went through a lot of this, but in reverse, Bennett said, referring to Teske transferring from Penn State back home to Northern Iowa. He just kept reminding me, you've only got one shot at this. You have to make it count, take care of yourself, and identify what makes you happy and motivates you to get to that next chapter. I'm not going to hold it against you and I, the state of Iowa or home, just because I feel like that needs to happen someplace else. Again, I know who will be there for me at the end of the day. I have to go find the best fit for my future. Looking at our next article in the sports section, entitled, Trochinski Joins Exclusive Program. The game of basketball has helped open up many doors for Faith Trochinski. Now the Manson Northwest Webster graduate wants to give back. Trochinski, a senior on the Concordia University women's basketball team, was recently selected to participate in an exclusive program hosted by the Women's Basketball Coaches Association. Along with student athletes from such schools as Iowa, Texas A&M, Penn State, and Clemson, Trochinski has been accepted into So You Want to Be a Coach, a special one-day workshop on March 30th. I was so excited, she said, and thankful for such a great opportunity. It means a lot to me, and it is such an honor to be selected. The group is made up of qualified candidates who have exhausted their final year of basketball eligibility at a four-year institution or have graduated within the past year. Also, the candidate's head coach had to nominate them, with the remaining deciding factors being academics, contributions to women's basketball on and off the court, and a written recommendation from their coach. Trochinski, who transferred from Briarcliff after 3 years to Concordia, received the final piece from Drew Olson, her new head coach. We are so thankful Faith came to Concordia, he wrote in the letter. She started her career at Briarcliff and made the tough decision to leave, but she has fit in perfectly to our Bulldog family. Faith is incredibly mature to recognize wanting a better college basketball experience. She is very coachable and buys into what the team needs. She is family-oriented. She is going to make a great coach because of her work ethic and knowledge of the game, and she genuinely cares for others. Trochinski began thinking about joining the coaching ranks during college, crediting her past coaches and strong passion for the game in helping make her decision. I will be forever grateful for the coaches I have had and the great mentors they are, she said. I have had so many coaches positively impact my life throughout my basketball career, and I want to do the same for the student athletes that I have the opportunity to coach. I would love to coach at the college level at an institution and basketball program that lines up with my values. The WBCA event is used to increase the understanding and application of skills necessary to secure coaching positions in women's basketball, along with introducing players to coaches and administrators in the sport. I am most excited for the opportunity to grow and learn, she said. I'm looking forward to meeting other coaches and people who share the same love for basketball. First, though, Trochinski and her Concordia teammates will face Marion in the NAIA Division II tournament in Sioux City on Friday in the round of 16. The Bulldogs are 21-8 on the season and the number 13 seed. Trochinski has scored 56 points on the year with 25 rebounds. She has over 600 points and her college career. It has definitely been different playing during COVID, Trzcinski said, but our team is so grateful for the opportunity to keep playing the game we love amongst everything that has happened this past year. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger sports section, for Eric Stein, the feeling of losing out on last season is still a tough pill to swallow, but Stein and the Iowa Central baseball team have moved forward in hopes of making the most of the opportunities ahead. Last year, the Tritons had a 7-1 record when the season was canceled due to COVID-19. While they continue to navigate through the pandemic, Stein believes it is, quote, just another layer to a complex time. It's what we have to deal with to have a season, Stein said. It's ever-changing stuff at the school, around the state, around the country, but you just figure it out, push through, and get to have a season. That is what it's about. Iowa Central was 7-4 through its first 11 games ahead of its home opener, competing in Kansas, Tennessee, Illinois, and Missouri. Typically, the Tritons would have over 20 games played by this point, but several scheduled trips were scrapped or altered. It's fun to get back on the field, Stein said. Last year was bizarre, and this year still is a little bit too, but to get out and play baseball games again, that's what it's all about. Newcomers such as Max Holley, Halen Martinez, Brock Johnson, Isaac Becker, Keaton Hartman have joined returning players Gavin Baker, Ben Dettay, Nathan Mortimer, Ryan Wickman, Derek Kay, Jack Severs, Ben Gallagher, Jeff Lamp, Devin Hurdle, Travis Rittenhouse, and Noah Susong in the lineup. Mortimer, Wickman, Kay, and Severs are all sophomores, while Baker, Dettay, Gallagher, Lamp, Hurdle, Reed, Rittenhouse, and Susong are freshmen who were on the roster last year. We got a good blend of power and speed, Stein said. I feel like our lineup can be versatile and give us multiple ways to score. While the offense has been strong so far, the pitching staff has turned in high-level efforts game after game, with Devon Shu and John Klein each earning National Pitcher of the Week honors. Those guys have just been great, said Stein, and we are going to need those kinds of outings from them all year. They have great potential and can really dominate games, and our bullpen is something we can use with different options when we need to. Shu and Klein are joined by former Pocahontas area All-Stater Jace Davidson and Easton Dermody at the front end, with Kai Room, Peyton Leonard, Matthew Wilkinson, Baker, Nathan Savalny, and several others having logged innings this season. The ICCAC will feature a super conference with the Division I programs joining the Division II teams throughout the regular season, along with the Tritons being ranked in Division II at number 20, Southeastern number 10, and Northeast number 14 are ranked, while Iowa Western is 10th in Division I. It's going to be as tough as it ever has been, said Stein, but just like any year in this conference, you're going to have ups and downs. How you deal with those is what makes or breaks you. We'll head back to the Marshalltown Times-Republican. The recent warm weather has encouraged people to be more active, but it has brought out more than joggers and hikers, according to Marshalltown Police Chief Mike Tupper. The Marshalltown Police Department has reported a rash of burglaries recently. Tupper said crimes like burglary tend to ebb and flow. The spring and early summer are times when typically more will occur. We've seen an uptick here recently. Sometimes one offender can be responsible for multiple crimes, Tupper said. We've made a couple arrests, and those investigations are still active. Early on March 11th, the police arrested Jimmy Allen Oskin. The 52-year-old was caught during a burglary in progress on East Southwich Road. It was discovered he had broken into three buildings in the area. In a separate case, the department investigated a theft report filed on February 21st. The investigation resulted in the police executing a search warrant and recovering stolen items. Joseph Whitty, 33, in Marshalltown, was arrested and charged with burglary and several other offenses in connection with the case. These cases are still being investigated. There is no evidence of a serial burglar, Tupper said. Burglary reports have not been isolated to any certain area of town, and no specific patterns have been identified. Burglary is always a high priority issue to us. The community is concerned about it, and we share those concerns, he said. Most often, burglars are looking for either cash or items that can be easily sold. Jewelry, electronics, and other items with obvious value are typically targeted. It is rare for a large quantity of items to be stolen at a time, but it does happen, as it did in the case of Witte. A lot of times, these are crimes of opportunity, Tupper said. Usually, people are looking for quick in-and-out types of theft crimes. They don't want to be in there for a long period of time. There are a few businesses in Marshalltown which buy and sell used items. Some burglars may attempt selling to pawn shops in Des Moines or Cedar Rapids, but Tupper notes his department and other area law enforcement offices work together, often on cases like burglary. If something suspicious is pawned, they may be alerted to it. Usually, these crimes are motivated by people who are involved in the use of drugs, he said. The things they steal, they can sell for money to buy drugs. There are some steps Tupper recommends to keep property safe, such as locking doors to homes, garages, and vehicles. It is also important to keep items of value out of sight, and if they are in a vehicle, not leave them in a vehicle when possible. It's been mostly small stuff at this point. Hopefully it slows down, he said. We'll continue to investigate the crimes that are active. I'm confident our police officers and detectives will resolve those too. The Marshall County Board of Supervisors authorized Chief Deputy Joel Phillips to assume the responsibility of sheriff at the Tuesday meeting. I'm just tickled we have someone of that caliber that we had to fill the position, said Supervisor Bill Patton. We really appreciate Joel. Supervisor Dave Thompson said the county still needs to accept applications until March 21st. Auditor Nan Benson said her office was on the phone with the Iowa Secretary of State to seek clarification regarding new special election laws, which is an option to fill the empty Marshall County Sheriff's seat. Previously, we had reported a petition would be filed following our notice, which was our special meeting, she said. They've now changed it so it's after the appointment occurs. Patrons have 14 days from the date of the appointment to file the petition with our office. So, Benson said, the new election law, which includes changes to absentee voting and ballots, contains more changes in the fine print, such as special election deadlines. We've not even gotten communicated as auditors what all those changes are, she said. Since Steve Hoffman resigned as Marshall County Sheriff on March 8th after Governor Kim Reynolds signed the election law, Benson said the new law would apply. She said, another important thing to note is that 1,828 signatures cannot be gathered on the special election petition until the day the appointment is made. Patton thanked Benson for being on top of the election law changes. Benson said with another appointment looming, that of the county attorney, something bugged her and she wanted to get clarification. County Attorney Jennifer Miller was appointed by Reynolds as District Court Judge on District 2B. On Thursday, the supervisors accepted Miller's resignation and voted to fill the vacancy by appointment. Patton, in the public forum section of the meeting, returned to the sheriff's discussion and wanted to give some clarification on a letter sent to Hoffman. He said normally when someone resigns, a date is given as the last day in the seat, but Hoffman did not initially provide one. A letter was sent to Hoffman about a resignation date and signed by Thompson as the chair of the supervisors. Patton said the letter represented all the supervisors and was approved by the county attorney. I just wanted to explain that there has been some misunderstanding there, he said. In other business, the 21-22 budget was also adopted at the Tuesday meeting. The supervisors resolved to reappropriate funds, which decreased the total from $43.7 million to $42.1 million. We've got insurance money, and that's why it's $42 million, said Patton. We're normally not anywhere close to that. Benson agreed, saying the Capitol Building and Tower Project are two capital line items. When those are removed, the budget would be as it normally was, which was around $24 million. Supervisor Steve Salasek asked why there was such a change in the county conservation, which increased from $1.1 million to $1.3 million. He was told that the change is due to land acquisition. The VFW and Auxiliary recently donated 348 boxes to the Iowa Veterans Home. Auxiliary President Connie Kennelly said the boxes were provided to give the residents something different to do during the pandemic. They also donated $400 worth of Little Debbie snacks, which is something that was needed. Residents play bingo and can choose a Little Debbie snack when they win. Kennelly could not find any snacks in Marshalltown and had to travel to Newton and Ankeny to find enough. The Marshalltown Bobcats are one step closer to entering a new era in their high school athletics history. At the Monday Marshalltown Community School Board meeting, Superintendent Theron Schutte resolved to break off into a separate conference. The action would separate the district from the Central Iowa Metro League, CIML, for the 22-23 school year and athletic year. The resolution passed unanimously. In a letter, the school board states as one of the reasons for the separation, the CIML lacks parity among its current member schools and therefore results in contests between teams that are competitively mismatched, and this has the effect of discouraging participation of students from those schools, including Marshalltown, that have suffered from this lack of parity. The discussion among the board was short, and Schutte gave his summary of the notice given by him and Athletics Director Ryan Isgrig at the last school board meeting. The Marshalltown Community School Board of Directors wishes to join a new or existing conference that will provide Marshalltown students with a more competitive and rewarding extracurricular experience, the resolution said. The stated goal of Schutte and the other five school boards involved is to have resolutions passed by April 1st by all boards, which would give the new conference time to properly notify the CIML and time to depart on its own in 2022. Time is also needed to create hire officials, and more administrative details. When asked if there were any concerns or questions ahead of the motion, school board member Sean Heitman expressed his support for the resolution. "My own thought is that this is a good deal for our kids," he said. "We'll help level the playing field a little bit more for our kids, maybe give us more opportunities to compete, and maybe get more kids interested in competing. I think, Dr. Schutte, you've done a tremendous job of pushing this thing forward with the other districts involved, which includes Fort Dodge. Now the wait is on to see the results of similar discussions at other potential member schools during the rest of the month, but at least on Marshalltown's end of the things, the departure from the CIML is one step closer to reality. Our time together is just about wrapped up, so let's go ahead and take a look at the weather forecast for the next several days. We'll look for a high of 49 on Thursday under partly cloudy skies, a low of 25. On Friday, clear skies, high of 54, a low of 29. On Saturday, clear skies, a high of 59, a low of 41 at night. And on Sunday, a high of 61. Under mostly cloudy skies. That night, there will be a 30% chance of rain with a low of 44 degrees. Rain chances continue and increase on Monday with a high of 60 degrees and a low Monday night of 43 degrees. We have a 60% chance of rain on Monday, 60% chance Monday night, and a 50% chance of rain on Tuesday with a high of 58 degrees. That's going to bring us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger with a little help from the Webster City Daily Freeman Journal and the Marshalltown Times Republican. Again, this podcast and many others are available to you at iowaradioreading.org. And of course, we encourage you to use our podcast. And I look forward to visiting with you again. This is Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Thank you for spending this time with me. And I look forward to reading to you again the Fort Dodge Messenger here on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Bye-bye for now. Thank you.
I'm getting older. Do I need to worry about falling?
Yes, you do. Every year, 1 in 4 people 65 and older will experience a fall, and many result in serious injury. The majority of falls happen at home, so take a look around. Replace bulbs and add lighting to help you see obstacles. Remove things that can make you trip. Fix uneven steps and floors, and install handrails in bathrooms and on stairs. Consider balance or strength training exercises, which can help with agility. Get your eyes and hearing checked regularly. Changes in your hearing can affect your balance. To learn more, please talk to your doctor about steps you can take to help prevent a fall. You can also visit aarpfoundation.org or medicaremadeclear.com/falls. This message was brought to you by United Healthcare and AARP Foundation.